rolling. One, two.
In the spring of 1989, in a Hollywood, California studio, tape started to roll and four musicians began to play. Kenny Barron sat at the piano. Bassist George Mraz and drummer Victor Lewis took control of the rhythm section. And a man with a tenor saxophone put the reed to his lips and began to blow. Stan Getz was back in the studio after a long struggle with cancer and with drug and alcohol addiction. The Grammy Award-winning player and member of the Downbeat Hall of Fame fanned the flames of the bossa nova era in the 1960s with his recording of Jazz Samba with Charlie Byrd, as well as his huge hit, The Girl from Ipanema, with Zsa Gilberto. Stan Getz's discography was lengthy, but by the end of the 80s, he didn't have a record deal. A&M signed him. Label co-founder, trumpeter, and record producer, Herb Alpert.
You know, Stan had the it. Whatever that it is, Charlie Parker had the it, you know?
Yeah.
There are a lot of musicians that just have that certain little something that's magical. I interviewed him, you know, on several occasions, just, you know, trying to squeeze out of him, what is that thing that you're doing? And as best as he could describe it, he says, look, jazz is not about licks. Jazz is not about who can play the fastest or the highest. Jazz is about a logical beginning, middle, and end. It's a total story. Aside from the fact, I mean, he had a beautiful sound. I mean, that sound was just gorgeous.
Stan Getz died in 1991, and this recording for 1989, produced by Herb Alpert, remained in the vaults. Alpert says his A&M label wasn't set up to properly market a straight-ahead jazz album at the time. Instead, he worked with Getz to create the more ambitious Latin jazz suite, Apasionado. Now, at long last, A&M Verve Records has released Bosses and Ballads, The Lost Sessions. There's a poignancy to listening to this because it was near the end of Stan Getz's life, and he was recovering or trying to cope with liver cancer and recovering from a heart attack. And he was also sober for the first time a long time. Do you hear something different in him playing on this session, given his physical circumstances?
He was a little skittish recording because he had gone through some, you know, chemo, and he was burning moxie in his belly button and doing everything to try and get this cancer out of him. If you're asking whether there was an urgency to his playing, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. There was a little fear because he hadn't played under those conditions before. He always felt, you know, if he wasn't stoned or wasn't, you know, doing something, that he couldn't express himself in the same fashion. And he found out that he could, and it really didn't change. It was as beautiful without.
Your friendship actually deepened. He rented a beach house next to your place in Malibu, so he was your neighbor.
Yeah, he was a neighbor, and he was a terrific friend. I mean, I loved him. He was, I didn't tell you the whole story. When we met in person, you know, when he asked me to produce the record, I said, no, I don't want to do it. He said, why? He said, well, I said, quite frankly, I've heard horror stories about you, how you've treated musicians through the years, and there's some things that have been said that I don't want to be part of that. I don't want that vibe around me. He says, man, believe me, I'm not that way anymore. He was so intent on making amends to all the people that he did offend, because he was, you know, not doing it it wasn't the real Stan coming out. I saw the real Stan. The real Stan was a gentleman. He was funny. He was a great friend. He was really a uniquely special guy.
Yeah. You're quoted as saying, as producer, that you felt your job was to make him comfortable. Do you think you succeeded? I mean, what does it take to make Stan Getz comfortable in a studio?
Well, to be around people that he likes. The studio was right. The engineer was right. We used Al Schmidt, who has a great track record of recording some of the great jazz musicians of our time. And Stan felt good with that. He liked the sound. We kept changing microphones to come up with that sound that is so synonymous with Stan Getz. Kenny Barron, as far as Stan was concerned, was his brother. He loved Kenny Barron. He loved the way he played. And he was playing with people he was comfortable with. And finally, he got to the point where he was in his groove.
There's a real lushness to the sound of this recording. I mean, something, it's almost, I don't want to say retro, but there's kind of a 60s feeling to it. And there's now a revival in interest in the music that was played then. And I wonder, do you think in some ways this recording is almost fits our ears a little bit better now than it might have were it released in 1989.
Well, that could be. I think the American public is getting a little more used to jazz, and especially when somebody is that recognizable as Stan was. I mean, his sound, all of a sudden you start feeling comfortable with him, and when he plays something that's lyrical and is understandable and becomes very a pleasant experience for the listener.
Stan Getz had a special touch with ballads. I mean, given this is called Bosses and Ballads, did he have something special with a ballad?
Well, I wouldn't say it was special with a ballad. He was special. I mean, forget about categories. The guy just had that thing that was uniquely his. I mean, I have a recording of him and Dizzy Gillespie playing Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing or something like that. And they take it at this obnoxious tempo. You can't even beat your feet to it. And Stan is just burning right through it. So he was fabulous in that setting. And as a ballad player, man, as a tenor sax player, I don't think there was anyone that could rival him. He was uniquely himself. And he always went for that melody. I mean, jazz is really taking a song and creating another melody on the same chord changes of that song. And he was continually looking for melodies.
Thank you.
When you go back, what do you hear? What do you hear when you listen to it now?
Well, like it's sad because when they uncovered that we had these tapes, they asked me if to, you know, go back in the studio and mix them. And then I went back into all, we recorded for 3 days. So we had like three or four different takes on each one. And I'd listen to each one and, you know, I'd find something beautiful on all of them, actually. Except that first day was a little dicey because, like I say, he was a bit nervous. But after that, it was all beautiful. But it was sad for me because Stan was going to get married at our home, my home in Malibu, a few months. Well, it was all planned. The marriage was planned, and he was the happiest he had ever been in his life. He told me that he was about to be the person he always wanted to be. And, you know, I think of that, and I just think of... What a blessing it was for me to have known someone like that in my lifetime.
Herb Alpert is producer of Stan Getz, Bosses and Ballads, The Lost Sessions on A&M Verve Records, and he joined us from member station KCRW in Santa Monica. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
There's more about Stan Getz, including full audio cuts from the CD, on our website at npr.org. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. ¶¶